Hello and welcome to the Wednesday, October 31st, 2012 edition of the Sands and its Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I am today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Just a quick review of what we have gotten in so far with respect to the storm Sandy. Well, not much actually, and I am a little bit surprised we haven't seen a single scam or anything like that happening. So either people are too busy cleaning up to put out these scams, or maybe we just haven't seen them yet, that they're a little bit under the surface. I looked at Twitter and such, and of course there's so many legitimate normal tweets about this topic that some of the malicious stuff may just be hidden too deeply. Also, no real search engine optimization tricks that I could uncover, or emails or such. So pretty good so far. Now, one topic that caused a little bit of discussion also in respect to the update diary I posted was disaster preparedness of some of the companies involved, and that are now of course shut down, including the New York Stock Exchange. There was actually a proposal to still allow automated trading on the stock exchange, and that would still have worked. It sounds like the electronic systems are all fine and operable, but it was decided to not go ahead with this plan, in part because they were afraid that volume would be quite large and they didn't really want to have something like this happening and a large volume then causing some kind of unexpected result with no people on site. So that's why they went ahead and just closed the market. Now, there is sort of one theme that I found that goes through some of the outages, in particular some of the hospitals that had failures of power generators. And that was the fact, while many of them had their power generators above ground on higher floors, the fuel storage and the pumps associated with fuel storage were in the basement and got flooded. So while the generator was fine, the generator no longer received fuel from these basement tanks. And there's only a limited amount of fuel sort of with the generator on the same level. In one case, apparently, they ran kind of a bucket brigade from the fuel tank in the basement to the generator's tank on the upper level. But really the problem here was that this storm was not really in any kind of forecast planning. It exceeded sort of the 100-year storm level that people usually plan for, and that kind of caused these issues. Also the fact to consider power outages and flooding at the same time, even though, of course, they frequently go together. Overall impact on internet infrastructure was very limited. At this point, I have only seen a couple of hosting locations right in the power outage zone in Lower Manhattan that were affected, but nothing really beyond that immediate area. Well, and then we had, of course, our Cybersecurity Awareness Month diary. And today's diary was written by Mark Hoffman from Australia. And he wrote a diary with an Australian spin to standards. He's focusing on the DSD-35. DSD stands for Defense Signal Directorate, which is essentially part of the Department of Defense in Australia. And it came up with 35 different mitigation strategies to actually lock down systems. Now, the interesting part here is that they actually say that if you use just four of these strategies, you will block 85% of intrusions. And they in particular consider here some of the more advanced malware intrusions. Now, what they, for example, recommend as these top fives is application whitelisting, definitely that's big on my list. And then there are two with respect to patches, applications, and operating systems, which are two different standards. And then minimize the number of users with domain and local admin privileges. So essentially, by just implementing those four controls, you will block 85% of the damage that can be done by malware. Now, while we're talking about malware, Symantec came out with an interesting blog post about some of the methods modern malware uses to hide itself from reverse analysis. Now, when you do reverse analysis, there are kind of two ways of doing it, and usually both ways are sort of used complementary with each other. First, runtime analysis, where you just run the malware, and secondly, a static code analysis, where you actually try to look at the code. Now, the second part, the code analysis, is very time consuming and requires some pretty specialized skills. So a much easier and faster way to get a first idea of what the malware is doing is to just run it in a virtual machine. Now, what Symantec is reporting here that malware is getting more sophisticated to figure out whether or not it's running on a real system. In particular, one thing that malware keeps doing now, or starts to do now, is to check whether or not input devices like the mouse is actually used. And then the malware will only run whenever the mouse is moved or whenever a button is pressed, which of course usually doesn't happen in these virtualized malware analysis environments. Well, in response, of course, now malware researchers need to either attach a mouse and move it around or simulate that function as well. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening. And if you see anything Sandy related, just pass it along, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.